Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of substance. And thank you all for joining us. We're recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we warmly welcome you all. And Florence will begin with our prayer.
I'm reading from page 60 of the Blue Book, Divinity Course in General Collectanea. Beloved Father, Mother God, give me wisdom to meet the problems I may have to meet today. Give me understanding to deny error and to proclaim the truth. Give me grace to keep silent when speech is unnecessary. There is no strife for truth. Risen truth will destroy error of every sort. And heaven is right here. God gives abundance of intelligence and opportunity. I cannot be impoverished mentally, physically, spiritually, or financially. God is substance, and I reflect that substance. Realize to yourself daily, more than once, that the fields are white and ready for harvest. The divine love always has met the need for work as well as any other. That mind is ever active, and you reflect divine activity. That the source of supply supplies every need. That there is plenty of work for all, and yours belongs to you, and no one else can do it. It comes to you direct, and the supply is abundant. And know all the time that is so. Never let a lack of anything stay a moment with you. It is rank error and brings all sorts of disease and difficulty. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. Yes, we have an abundant God. Mm. All right, the watching point, Karen.
Watch number 148. Watch, lest when you are whipped by your human experiences to speed you up spiritually, as one would whip a sluggish horse to make him go, you complain and turn around to investigate what it is that's whipping you. Jesus admonishes us, after we have put our hand to the plow, not to look back. When you do, it tends to slow you up and to nullify the good that you should be doing. This is Eddy once declared, quote, error is nothing but erroneous thought, and we must never give into it or go down before it. We must go ahead of error and keep ahead of error all the way, end quote. This statement shows that if we look back, error may have a chance to catch up with us. Let us suppose that a sense of lack appears in your experience. Instead of trying to discover the human reasons for this happening, should you not regard it as a whip, the purpose of which is to start you working with more fervor? Not for money as matter, but for a higher spiritual consciousness of the fact that as a child of God, you are not dependent upon, nor do you need, matter or material money as such, since you are God's child, cared for in every way. This realization would bring you the supply you needed.
Okay, comments?
Well, it is true that whatever difficulty we seem to be going through, it is just telling us we need to go higher. We need to get out of matter into mind and know that we're spiritual and God's child. And it's whatever experiences we need to do that, we have to look at them. I have to look at them as really, it's going to be a blessing because it's just going to get me out of matter and more into spirit.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's so tempting to just ruminate on it and try to figure out why this and what that, and it, you know, instead just to to be so strong and look to God. I mean, certainly you need to face error first and figure out, you know, maybe you've done something wrong that you need to rectify, but just to stay out of that whole drama and ruminating thing and be grateful for whatever infirmity seems to be, because it will push you higher if you allow it to.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, there's always this asking, you know, why or what, or why did this happen to me? Or it's not bad to ask that if there's lessons to be learned, but not to dwell on it. Sometimes there is something that, you know, God is prodding you and showing you that you need to learn. But if you dwell on it too much, or mainly complain or think he did it to you, all of that is the problem. Because God never does anything but bless us.
And it will become clear what the lesson is that you need to learn.
It will become clear, yes. Go ahead, Florence.
Yeah, I think the higher spiritual consciousness, I like that, because really it's not just about not having money but health, you know, contentment, peace, all of it. You know, I like what Mrs. Eddy says, and never let the thought of lack of anything be with you for a moment, because then you're saying there are two powers. As soon as we admit that, then you're saying there are two powers. And there is always, never, never has been ever two powers, only one, God. The error has no law. It has no authority. It has nothing behind it. But God alone is power.
Thank you. So, yeah, and as Christian Scientists, many of us do not accept the fact, you know, that you're sick, but many accept that they don't have or they lack. Neither one is right. Mrs. Eddy said that. She says to accept poverty is no more true than to accept the belief of cancer or anything else like that. We don't accept what's not right. As a child of God, we have all things, everything that we need, maybe not everything we want, but all that we need. Who else was speaking?
I was just going to say that also everything is about learning about the true nature of God, and whatever we seem to be going through, excuse me, at the moment, it's just it's a lack of understanding of God that we need to rectify. We need to learn more about the nature of our Father, Mother, God, because when we do that, then we realize we don't have to get a healing or get a job or get anything. And that's what the true nature of God reveals to us. We already have all that he has, we have, as the Bible promises, all that he is, we are. And so it's just getting a better understanding of the nature of God and therefore the nature of man.
Thank you. In a Carrie sent all these beautiful articles this week. The one called Real Treasure, it says that God's infinite supply of life, truth, and love, the real substance, is always at hand. And our only possible lack is an inability to grasp the truth of being and assimilate it. That's the lack. It's always there. And this lesson, which is such a beautiful lesson, it shows time and time again, God's abundance ever at hand. The problem is the lack of an ability to grasp this truth, to have faith in the truth and to assimilate it, thereby finding all we need or can rightly desire. This better understanding of life will surely eventuate in better living, an understanding of love, a right perception of truth, the necessary wisdom to solve aright all our problems, hence a more harmonious existence. It is true wisdom, therefore, to concentrate our whole activity in the effort to know more of God and his creations, and in the measure of our success, we certainly cannot suffer from want of any of the necessities and comforts of life. And more than this, we should not desire any more than that. Surely our gratitude should be unbounded, and we should heed the words of Moses, "When thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee." That's part of today's problem, too, is, you know, we've had an abundance of so many things. Have we stopped and thanked God for it and seen him as the source? Or do we think ourselves as being the source? This is a huge difficulty. And of course, all the abundance does not make anyone particularly any happier. It is in the gratitude. It is in the joy. It is in knowing the Father that makes us happy. And this all goes along with seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and then these other things will be added unto you. It's the most, most basic precept of science. Nancy, would you read the first paragraph of what you sent?
Sure. This is from Signell Young, 1937 College. Harmony is the evidence of substance. Healing is proof of substance. Love is a proof of substance. Mind, principle, soul, and spirit are the substance of things hoped for by Christian scientists. As one grows in understanding, he grows in substance, and what he gains is incapable of discord and decay.
I really love that. That's so beautiful. I think it was Lenny this week saying she was thinking about what are her real treasures? What are your real treasures?
I've looked up the word on treasure just to see. It sounds silly to look it up, but you know, this idea of, you know, it's wealth accumulated, something very much valued, a great quantity of anything collected for future use, great abundance. So I started thinking, okay, well, my treasure then needs to be spiritual, you know, a great abundance of spirit, a great abundance of love, a great abundance of truth, you know, building those things up.
Thank you. And that's what Signell Young was just saying. Those are our treasures, and those are treasures that are incapable of discord and decay.
Somebody once wrote that someone mentioned to Mrs. Eddy that, you know, how difficult it is to see spirit. And Mrs. Eddy responded, "My dear, you can't help but see spirit. That's all you can see is spirit."
And that is true. And in the right mind, you do. Lawrence, did you want to say something?
No, I was saying you can feel it. You can feel it. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. It's all around. And all the substance that you need is all around, and can become in tangible forms. That is what the prophets knew.
Well, isn't that like saying also that you can't see the wind, but you can see the trees blowing? And in the same manner, you can see all of God's love and all of the creations that we have and experience and that are beautiful.
Yes.
Correct.
It's not seen with the eye, but seen spiritually, feeling it. Yeah.
Yes. And that leads to this beautiful article that Karen found. Karen.
Oh. Okay. In the responsive reading, the last verse, "By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." And I found this wonderful commentary from Benson.
Moses we're talking about, in case anyone wonders.
Yes. Yeah, Moses. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. "By faith, namely in the power of God to preserve and conduct him and them, notwithstanding Pharaoh's rage and threatening, he forsook Egypt, taking all the Israelites with him, not fearing the wrath of the king, as did many years before when he fled from Egypt into Midian. For he endured, continued resolute and immovable, as seeing him who is invisible, keeping the eye of his mind continually fixed on that great invisible being, whose presence and friendship is of such importance that the person who fixes his regards on him will never by any consideration be influenced knowingly to offend him. nor be much impressed with the fear of any person or thing that would tempt him to do this. This character of God is here given with peculiar propriety. Moses was now in that condition and had those difficulties to encounter, wherein he continually stood in need of divine power and assistance. Whence this should come, he could not discern by his senses. His bodily eye could behold no present assistant, for God was invisible. But he saw him by faith, whom he could not see with his bodily eyes. And thus, seeing him, he found him a present help, no less than if he had been manifest to his senses. A double act of Moses' faith is intended herein. First, a clear, distinct view and apprehension of God's omnipresence, power, and faithfulness. And second, a steady trust in him on account of these perfections. This he relied on, to this he trusted, that God was everywhere present with him, able to protect and assist him, and faithful to his promises. Of these things he had as certain a persuasion as if he had seen God working with him and for him with his bodily eyes. This sense of God he continually had recourse to in all his hazards and difficulties, and thereby endured courageously to the end.
That was so beautiful. What a wonderful point it makes. How could he have possibly done all that if he didn't know that God was right there by his side? He could see what no one else could see. He had total faith. Yeah. And it gives us all hope, because in the beginning, wasn't he afraid of everything? Who am I? Well, I can't speak. I can't do this. Yeah, he did run. He ran. And how many years in the wilderness? 40? I mean, some say he didn't really take up this work till he was 80. Anyway. Very, very beautiful, very hopeful. Thank you for finding that. I love that. And then the question, how do you feel? Do you know this invisible
friend
is with you, helping you every moment? Carol talks to him all the time. Lawrence?
No, I think this is so important. I've been thinking about that all week and prior to this, because this invisible infinite, it's infinite. So it's always present with everyone, everywhere. And it's very, very important to, you know, just be awakened to that. That thought that, no, I walk with him. He lives my life, in fact. So, yeah.
Thank you.
And no one is outside of this love. We're all included.
Yes. Everyone.
Even me?
No, not you.
I'm also reminded how important it is. Every hour of the day, I'm really improving in that. Every hour of the day, I am affirming my oneness with God. Every hour, I just try to make sure that no matter what I'm doing, at least I'm knowing that. And then, and that tells me I'm one with everything that he is, so I have everything. But if I just connect with him and stay connecting my oneness with God every hour of the day, it's really helped me to keep my head above whatever it is I'm doing on a material, you know, seemingly. But that has really been helping me, just that one thought.
Thank you very, very much. Yes. Yeah, we used to set buzzers off to remind us. Very important. You'll be surprised. You start off so strong, and then by the end of the day, you're afraid of this, that, and the next thing. Well, how did that happen? Except you're drifting. So to do this every hour is most important. And as Daniel, he prayed, right, with his face to Jerusalem 3 times a day, diligently. Jeremy.
And Moses was fitted to do this during his time of being a humble shepherd. You know, I think that it's just like a really important thing that he did that humble work and then he was made ready. So if you're called to do humble things, you should take it as an opportunity and not a curse or anything.
Thank you very much. I don't know of anyone who starts off in high and mighty positions. A humble position is greatly to be treasured all the days of your life, if that's what you're called to do. Humble positions are good. You know, I've always loved this in Science and Health, page 321, where Mrs. Eddy says, the Hebrew lawgiver, slow of speech, despaired of making the people understand what should be revealed to him. See, he didn't think he could do it. When led by wisdom to cast down his rod, he saw it become a serpent. Moses fled before it, but wisdom bade him come back and handle the serpent, and then Moses' fear departed. And then in this incident was seen the actuality of science. Matter was shown to be a belief only. The serpent evil under wisdom's bidding was destroyed through understanding divine science, and this proof was a staff upon which to lean. The illusion of Moses lost its power to alarm him when he discovered that what he apparently saw was really but a phase of mortal belief. And then it goes on about the leprosy, right? He thought he had leprosy. He put his hand in his bosom. He drew it forth. It was white as snow. Wow. With a dread disease. But then he restored it again with this simple process. God had lessened Moses' fear by this proof in divine science. And the inward voice became to him the voice of God, which said, it shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. And so it was in the coming centuries, when the science of being was demonstrated by Jesus, who showed his students the power of mind by changing water into wine and taught them how to handle serpents unharmed, to heal the sick and cast out evils in proof of the supremacy of mind. We have had so many proofs of this over and over and over. So why do you still doubt? What's the matter here?
I'm sorry, Mary. Go ahead.
No, you go first. That's okay.
I was just going to say that when my daughter says, I don't know how to do this, or I can't say that, I don't know how, or myself, when I hear it within myself, I acknowledge, great, that's the best beginning. Do you know you can't do it? So that you have to begin there, because God's going to do it. And yet, so you're forced to turn to God. If you think you can do it, then that's sometimes, you know, yes. It's, but when you know, when you feel, I don't know how to do this, you go, great, start there. Because then you know you have to turn to God and he'll show you. But if you think you can do it all, there's no room for God to in there. So I'm learning
very,
that too.
Very true. Yeah, anytime anyone tells me that too, I can't do it, I say, yes, that's absolutely right. You can't. Because you can't. No one, only God.
Yeah. Or if they're like, oh, I can totally do this, then you're like, oh, you better watch out. Yeah,
and you know, I was reading recently some of, you know, we're having a spiritual warfare now. I guess you all know that. But some of it is this belief that man is God, that man can do. And they're not looking to God. They're looking to man. They're looking to themselves to correct the problems. And it's doomed to fail. So only God. Mm-hmm. Lawrence?
No, it never worked. Well, I mean, it's been done many times. It never works. Man can't do it. It's God who does it.
Man will make a huge mess, even if it appears for time to be successful. It'll fail. Mm-hmm. And you see, Moses accepted this. He, when God was telling him this with this rod and the leprosy and all of that, he saw it. He realized, my gosh, there is some greater power than I am, and I will submit to it. He just took it, hook, line, and sinker. And then as that other article that Karen found showed, he knew we had this invisible helper. Didn't matter how the children complained. Didn't matter how they called him terrible names. Didn't matter. He just kept doing it. Manna in the wilderness, water where there was no water, crossing the Red Sea, you name it, he did it with unfailing faith and strength. And then in this beautiful article called Through Faith We Understand, there's a marked correlation between the 11th chapter of the Epistle to the Hebrews, which deals primarily with faith, and the opening paragraph of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, in which she states, the prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of him, and unself-love. Through common usage, the meaning of the word faith, like so many other figures of speech, by means of which spiritual ideas are conveyed to human consciousness, has become materially corrupted. Mrs. Eddy therefore employs the qualifying adjective, absolute, in order to restore to the meaning of the word faith with its proper value. And thus she distinguishes it from the lower sense of the term in which it is used as a synonym for mere belief. With this clarified sense of faith, the definition of it as the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, becomes vastly more significant. It is through this living faith, the writer up to the Hebrews tells us, we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. Failing to appreciate the necessity of this essential quality of faith in their so-called scientific researches, the wise men of the world ignore the divine method of interpretation and seek the explanation of all natural phenomena through mere material observation and reasoning. It was obviously this misdirected use of the physical senses and of the human intellect on the part of the Jews which called forth from Jesus that incisive rebuke, "Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment." These words of the most successful practitioner of spiritual healing who has ever appeared on earth contain the very keynote of Christian Science. As an illustration of this, Mrs. Eddy writes under the marginal notation, quote, "Mind's true camera," unquote, in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, page 264, "Mortals must look beyond fading finite forms if they would gain the true sense of things. Where shall the gaze rest but in the unsearchable realm of mind?" And this is what Moses did, didn't he? Mind's true camera. And this is what Florence started the discussion on. Yes, your spiritual sense, you have to use it. You have to see beyond what you think you see or know and realize what is true and what is there, and then declare for it, demand it. Don't go through your day a miserable mortal. What fun is that? You don't have to. God is with you. He's right there instructing you every minute what to do, what to say, how to do it. He's a living presence for all of us. And then, Carol, do you want to say, tell us? We had found this a couple years ago, but it's worth repeating.
It's about Pharaoh's army.
Yes.
Under the Red Sea. They've actually found the remains of Pharaoh's army just in 2024, just a couple of years ago. There have been stories of divers who saw things that looked like broken wheels, and they all the authorities said, "Oh, that's just a myth. That didn't happen. That's just a Bible myth." Well, in late 2024, a group of private backers quietly donated $10 million to find out. They gathered a team of divers, engineers, and underwater archaeologists using high-tech cameras, deep-sea drones, and submersible scanners. They had maps that previous divers had drawn and followed the maps. Hundreds of feet below the surface, they found bones, they found skeletons of horses, chariot wheels with four spokes, six spokes, and eight spokes, which is the wheels that the Egyptians used at that time. Pharaoh got the eight-spoke wheels. it rode nicer. And the field stretched almost a mile and a half long. They found the remains of hundreds of chariots. The wood was mostly rotted away, but the coral that covered the wood remains. There are twisted metal axles and other pieces of metal remaining, including even a gold-coated wheel that they figured Pharaoh must have used that too. Sonar revealed a land bridge 10 miles long, only 900 feet below the surface. But on each side of the land bridge, the seabed drops down a mile. The debris field extended along that bridge. One theory is that around that time, a volcano exploded, possibly the worst ever, causing a tsunami. Before a tsunami hits, it draws the water back away from the land, possibly exposing the land bridge. Moses and his people crossed safely, but when the Egyptians got into the middle of the bridge, the tsunami hit and the children of Israel were saved. They have videos and they have pictures now that verify that they really did find all that. And it was a video that I saw, and it was fascinating to see it all. And they told the scientists about it, showed them the videos. They didn't say a word. They were not excited. They were all.
So,
but that was fascinating. It was.
Yeah, so you know, in order to have the eyes to see the spiritual sense, you've got to have this faith in the Father. Absolute faith, and we can all get it. Take heart. If Moses could, anyone can. Look at the accomplished when you see beyond the physical senses. And so, yes, it was thrilling to hear of all that proof. Of course, we didn't need it, but some people do. And that's good. You know, that's good because I don't know what's being taught our children, especially those that don't attend Sunday school. We can say, well, ha, well, we've got proof. If you want to argue, we got proof. Anyway. And then this was very beautiful, too. This article is by Annie Knott called Pleasure and Pain, also sent to me by Carrie. In Hebrews, we read that Moses, who in his early manhood was surrounded with the splendor of the Egyptian court, turned his back upon it, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. And that's a quote from Hebrew. His pleasure, his joy, like that of the master, was to be found in the glorious work of emancipating the human race from its enslavement to evil of every sort. Where are you getting your joy, folks? Is it in the splendor of the Egyptian courts? Or is it in this work? The work we're carrying on. I thought that was so great. The human sense of pleasure needs the transforming power of spirit to cleanse it from the falsities of mortal belief. And as this is accomplished, the desire for pleasure is changed into the consciousness of pure joy. And all the while, new energies are being unfolded which make joy possible in every experience. The sooner we make our choice, the better for us, because as we read on page 390 of Science and Health, truth will at length compel us all to exchange the pleasures and pains of sense for the joys of soul. Think about it, and think about, you know, how are we teaching our children what gives pleasure? Going to Disney World for a week?
or helping our neighbor? What are we cultivating? What has America cultivated in this? And we better be so grateful we have a church that is working the glorious work of emancipating the human race from its enslavement to evil of every sort. That is the only true joy. And my friends, if you've been looking for it elsewhere, it will go. It will leave you, and then you'll be bereft for a while until you figure this one out. And then it will change everything. And I love what it says. And as this is accomplished, the desire for pleasure is changed into the consciousness of pure joy. And all the while, new energies are being unfolded, which makes joy possible in every experience. Is that not true for those of you who are experiencing it, or experiencing it even in a part?
No.
Yes, it's the only there is. Go ahead, Florence.
No, it's true. That's what I wanted to say. It is true.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And, you know, as you do this and you're not so focused on getting everything for yourself, whatever it is you think you want, and you focus on helping mankind, you will have everything you want, everything you need, everything.
You won't want things that you don't need, for one thing.
Well, the story in the lesson this week about the woman who had, she thought, nothing. And in that thinking that she had nothing, she had nothing. But as soon as she was told to pour out whatever she had in the house, whatever that is, start pouring that out. That's the law of supply. You do that and you've got abundance. So I love that story because it really does reveal the law of demand and supply. You pour out, then you receive abundantly, whatever you can.
Thank you. Yes, that was coming up soon. That story was a perfect example of this. And pouring forth, not skimping a little bit. Oh, I'll give this a little bit here. Pouring it forth. You think about things, especially these people who think you don't have much. What do you just think? It's selfish thought. Think outward. Remember, outward, upward, heavenward, not inward.
Downward and hellward.
And hellward. And then this is one by Blanche Hersey Hogue. In the 11th chapter of Hebrews, Paul says, by faith, when he was called to go out into a place which he should, after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing whether he went. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of courage to leave your homeland. A lot of courage. He left everything. Over and over again, upright and earnest men and women are called upon to go out from sinful or outworn conditions of thought, not knowing whether they go. They know only that they must leave behind them that which is inconsistent with the highest selflessness, and that they must walk in obedience to the best they know, whithersoever it may lead. And then it talks about the prodigal son going up higher. I will arise and go to my father. He turned from the restless dwelling places of selfishness toward the Christly consciousness of which Isaiah has said, my people shall dwell in peaceable habitation and sure dwellings and in quiet resting places. Dwelling in the valleys, one is subject to valley conditions and must climb to a higher altitude to enjoy perpetually sunlit peaks. Tarrying in the realm of the valley fogs, one may fight bravely but in vain to resist them. Abandoning the lower land, one escapes all its conditions. So a higher moral and spiritual altitude will lift one into a realm beyond the reach of error, suggestion, or attack. It is God's country, this daily and hourly companionship with the best one knows of God. And well should man heed the scriptural admonition, acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace, thereby good shall come unto thee. We are all called to go up higher, to leave those valleys of selfishness and other negativity, fear, and go up higher. Sometimes, many times, perhaps most times, you don't have to leave where you're living. Sometimes you do, and I've seen that. I've seen people tarry in a place that wasn't a good atmosphere for them, and it wasn't a good idea just because of what it said. They were sailed by things that they wouldn't have been if they were willing to get up and go. As hard as that is sometimes, look what Abraham accomplished. He would not have accomplished that if he stayed there in that, where was he? The land of Ur or someplace. Anyway, if he'd stayed, okay, thank you. If he'd stayed, he had to get up and go, as hard as that was. I had a dear brother. If he'd only gotten up and left the atmosphere he was in, he'd still be alive today working for this church. But he chose to stay, and that was okay. That was his choice, and so it was. I can give you many examples of that. You have to have that courage to get up and go when God is telling you. But as I said too, many of you can stay where you are and do the work. And if you can do that, good. But it requires, as Karen says, every hour to make sure you're knowing your oneness with the Father. If you really want to do the work, you've got to be consistent and consecrated. And next, we get to the wonderful story of, yes, the pot of oil. And Karen explained that well, what she had to do, look away from the need and from the pot of oil, away from matter and material sense testimony to the abundance of all good. And when she did that, she found it. Get away from the selfish thought, the inward, downward, hellward. And that word oil, Kara spoke to it Wednesday, because it's been meaning so much to me now too. Oil, anoint your head with oil, the 23rd Psalm. The definition of that is, does anyone know it? Because
holy inspiration.
Yes.
Holy inspiration. That's how I've been.
Thank you. Go ahead. I should have it.
Consecration, charity, gentleness, prayer, heavenly inspiration.
Yes. And consecration, that definition, devoted to God or divine service. So, you know, you can seek your material pleasures while you may, but they are going to get tiresome after a while. They won't bring this pure joy that you're looking for. They'll bring maybe a level of this, and if that's where you're at, then that's fine. But eventually, material streams dry up, as the hymn says, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
When all material streams are dry, thy fullness is the same.
Thank you. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. So, yes. So, go ahead, Jeremy.
It's like strip mining. You just feel empty after.
Yes. Yes.
But the lesson from this story is that we all have something that we can offer to mankind, whether it's a product or whether it's a service. God has given each one of us something that we can offer to mankind, for which we will get compensated and for which we can earn a living. But the point is, you know, look at what we have to offer. You know, people look at business and think, you know, how can I make as much money as I can? Well, that's backwards. It's totally backwards. And it will come back to bite for people who have that attitude. But properly understood, business is, I have something that I can offer to mankind, and I will offer it to mankind. And because it is divinely given, it is infinite. It will never dry up. And by the way, people will pay me a fair wage, and I'll be able to eat and live and, you know, have a good life. But it starts with, what do you have to offer mankind?
What do you have in the house? Lawrence, what were you going to say?
No, I was saying, what do you have to bless man with? That's all.
That's
what
it.
Do you have to bless?
That's it. Many wonderful inventions have been made from that. Wonderful things have happened from that outward, upward, heavenward thought. In this article, and it is called A Pot of Oil, it says, every sick or poverty-stricken sense of life and matter is but an empty vessel awaiting to be filled with heavenly inspiration, waiting for the prayer of affirmation, gratitude, and praise. One thought of truth in the sacred sanctuary of divine consciousness with the door shut so that material sense may not enter with its aggressive suggestions is sufficient if poured out. Poured out. So, and then what Jesus said, give and it shall be given unto you. Freely ye have received, freely give. There will come a point, if God has been giving wonderful things to you and you just take, and isn't this wonderful, those streams will run dry.
Yeah, it's like it says,
and sometimes
John,
it says,
every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away.
There we are. Thank you.
And sometimes it's thoughts. You know, it's like, okay, so you don't think you have a thing to give, but do you have somebody that you can forgive? Pour out forgiveness. Pour out gratitude. Pour out. Start there if you don't think you know. Find something maybe in your closet, but pour out whatever it is you think you can't do. Pour out. Just pour out forgiveness. Pour out gratitude. Pour out joy. Just pour it out and see what happens.
Yes, absolutely. You got that. No one takes that from you. That is part of you. That is part of what you can give. But people withhold.
Mm-hmm.
Pour out, and you will receive. These are laws. This isn't my opinion. Boy, do I see it work. And now to get back to oil. You should lubricate yourself every day. You know, this idea of cranky bones and arthritis and all this.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Yes. Express this joy, this love. This oil, it's most important. In that book, A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23, he talks about the importance of the oil was to the sheep, that they could have all these bugs bothering them. And he would put oil on them. And suddenly these sheep or lambs who were so upset because of the bugs, they suddenly become peaceful and calm. It was oil. He said, what an incredible transformation this would make among the sheep. Once the oil had been applied to the sheep's head, there was an immediate change in behavior. Gone was the aggravation, gone the frenzy, gone the irritability and the restlessness. Instead, the sheep would start to feel quiet again and soon lie down in peaceful contentment. This to me is the exact picture of irritation in my own life. How easy it is for there to be a fly in the ointment of even my most lofty spiritual experience. So often it is the small petty annoyances that ruin my repose. It is the niggling distractions that become burning issues that can well nigh drive me around the bend or up a wall. At times, some tiny tantalizing thing torments me to the point where I feel like I'm just beating my brains out. So anyway, then he says, but you know, to think of this oil, just as with the sheep, there must be a continuous and renewed application of oil. And he says the oil is the Holy Spirit of God to forestall the flies in my life. There must be a continuous anointing of God's gracious Spirit to counteract the ever-present aggravations of personality conflicts. Only one application of oil, sulfur, and tar was not enough for the entire summer. It was a process that had to be repeated. The fresh application was the effective antidote. Anoint your head with oil daily. And then Mrs. Eddy has given us this. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are vexed. O you dry bones, hear the word of the Lord, and your bones shall rejoice, for God governs them. Make me hear gladness, that the bones which thou hast broken may rejoice. Lubricate your bones with oil, all right? And you won't have all these aches and pains and arthritis and other ridiculous things. Mm-hmm. It's only built up resentment and all this other stuff that Philip Keller was talking about, where he felt like beating his head out. Don't do that. Put some oil on it. You'll be fine. Okay, Gary is now going to end with something that our dear friend and Linda from Nevada sent to us, which is a word to the wise.
And this is by Herbert W. Eustace, and it's an excerpt from his book, Christian Science, It's Clear, Correct Teaching and Complete Writings.
You can start where it begins. And it's Mrs. Eddy speaking.
So, yes, he's quoting Mrs. Eddy. Quote, "We each dwell in our own world of consciousness. We look out through the window of this consciousness and behold the passing procession of mortal mind. Day after day, we have been lured forth, have been pressed into the world, lost our individual peace and poise in divine mind, and found ourselves dragged through the meanness, the uncleanness, and pain of the procession. We seek to regain our own house of consciousness, wiser for the experience, thinking we will not again be part of error's pageant. But here let the newer understanding of love guard well your door. Stay in your own house of mental demonstration. Keep your peace. For idle curiosity, criticism, or even false sympathy may lure you forth. Wherein lies the wisdom of the serpent? To hide itself. Therefore, hide yourself well in the understanding of Christian Science, be it great or small. We have all in some way needed the experience we have had. Never be found as a Christian Scientist mourning over an experience. It is a thing of the past, but not so the manifold power and presence of God resulting therefrom." End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.